We're in this series called The God Story, and it's called Promise in the Waiting, but really this is about trust. I called it Promise in the Waiting, but really I think the theme of the message is trust. How do you trust people? How do you trust anything? When you think about your life, the decisions that you make, a lot of it comes down to trust. How do you decide who and what you are going to trust? Have you thought about that? Remember years ago, I was 20 years old. I think I was about 20. And a buddy of mine, and was in the Lower Mainland. We'd grown up together. We decided to hop on a ferry across the island in Nanaimo. And in Nanaimo, there's this place. There's a river, and there's a great big bridge that goes over the river. And if you want, you can strap a rubber band around your ankles and jump off of it and believe and trust that that rubber band is going to hold you as you jump off the bridge. And so we're deciding to do this. We go over, and, you know, you do a little bit of research just trying to find out. I mean, this is pre-internet days, so you can't really research on the internet, but, you know, are there any stories of there of people jumping off this bridge and smacking their head on the ground? Didn't hear any stories about that. We get there, and you stand at the bottom, and you look up, and probably for about 20 minutes or half an hour, we just watched people jump off, make sure that the rubber band doesn't break. And after a while, we were able to gain enough courage for us to walk up the stairs. And as you get up to the top of the bridge, and you get up to the top, and you look down, you're like, oh, that's actually a lot further down than what it looked like from the bottom. You know, and you go and you stand on the ledge, and you stand, and they start wrapping your ankles, making sure that it holds when you jump off, and you're looking down, and like, I'm not sure there's ever been a time in my life where my heart wasn't beating faster. Like, just going crazy. And you're standing at the edge of this bridge, and everything with you, like, if you're a normal person, I'll just clarify that. If you're a normal person, like, everything within you is screaming out, like, don't do it. Like, there's a self-preservation thing that God's placed within us that tells us not to do stupid stuff. And it's screaming out, don't do it. And yet, there's a trust that I'm placing in the workers and that big, thick rubber band and whatever, that when I jump, it's going to be okay. And then eventually you do jump, and you scream halfway down, unsure that you made the right decision. Well, I'm here today so you know that the rubber band did hold me up. Can we trust God's promises? Can we trust the things that God says in the Word, in the Bible, through Jesus, through the prophets, through his apostles? Can we trust it? And what makes it trustworthy? In the first few chapters of Genesis that we have passed through in the last several weeks, we talk about a God that creates the world, a good God that creates a beautiful world. And he creates humanity, the pinnacle of his creation. And he invites humanity in this journey with him to take care of this good planet that he's created, to rule and reign with him. And yet something goes wrong in that process. There are seeds that are planted in the minds and the hearts of humanity that says, is God really good? Can I truly trust the word of God? Is he telling me the truth? Maybe there is a better way. Maybe I have a better way. And there's this disease that we talked about, this disease of self-gratification, this disease of self-exaltation that infiltrates creation. And despite God's pursuit of his wayward children, if you walk through Genesis 1 to 11, there's this pursuit that God has of humanity, but despite his pursuit of humanity, there's this downward spiral with Cain and Abel, with his descendants. You have the story of Noah. You have the story of the Tower of Babel, and it's just this spiral that happens. And then you hit this part at the end of Genesis 11 and Genesis 12, and this is a hinge point in the story. It's the hinge point in terms of the history of humanity and the history of God working with humanity. We're introduced to this guy named Terah. And he has children, he has sons, he has one named Abram. And in Genesis 12, that's where we're going to be starting today, it says this. And the Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I'll make you into a great nation. I'll bless you and make you famous. And you'll be blessing to others. I'll bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you. Imagine having that conversation. Garth was talking about that call from BCLC. This is that crazy call from BCLC, except it's from God. And there's all these promises, but before you hit the promises that are there, God's asking him to take kind of a stupid leap of faith. It's not standing at the edge of a bridge with a rubber band wrapped around his ankle, but for him, it maybe have felt something similar. He says, I want you to leave your country, the place that you've ever known, the culture that you know, and I want you to leave your people, the people that you're comfortable with, your friends, maybe your extended family. And then he says, I want you to also leave your family, your father, maybe aunts and uncles, maybe his mother, whatever, all the family. I want you to leave all of that. And to make matters worse, if you watch the story, you read the story, this is not happening when Abram is 20 years old. This is happening when Abram's 75. Now, if you know anything about aging, I'm starting to learn that, but I've been watching it for several years with my grandparents, my parents, and other people, is you recognize that as you get older, like at 75, change usually isn't on the docket, right? You've become comfortable in life. You've figured stuff out. And you want to be in your own bed at night. For better or for worse, you're just comfortable with where you're at. And here is God. He doesn't choose to talk to Abram when he's like 20 or 30. He's like, how about 75, Abram? I'm going to reveal myself and I'm going to ask you to take that leap of faith at 75. It's crazy. And why did Abram leave? Why did he choose to listen to this voice? It's interesting because in this story, there's no hint that Abram has ever heard the voice of God before. There's no hint that Abram has any awareness of this God named Yahweh. You almost get the sense, and maybe I'm reading into the text here a bit, but that God is revealing himself to Abram maybe for the very first time in his life. And there's this voice that's telling him, Abram, I want to do something in you. I'm going to do something in you. And he's got to trust him. He wants to take him from a normal life and take him through a journey, a risky adventure. Can I say something? When God calls your name, it's different. It's just different. Why is he willing to do this? And I think it's because God's voice is just different. When I was 16 years old, I heard the voice of God in my life. And everything changed for me. Because at 16, my life was going this way. And that voice was so strong, and it was a voice telling me, I want you to give yourself over to full-time Christian ministry. And it changed everything. And the only reason why I was willing to go down that path is because the voice of God, and it's different. It's that voice that even though you've maybe never ever heard it before, but if it speaks into your heart, you know you can trust it. You know you can trust it. I had no idea where that journey was going to happen, and then I'm now from 16, and now I'm at the age of 20, and I hear that voice again telling me that I'm going to be moving to the Middle East. Not typically a place that a Canadian desires to move to, especially if you watch the news. But it's the voice. It's the voice of God that's different. That says, even though it makes no sense, you can trust me. You're going to be okay. I have this. And you do stupid things because you trust the voice. Or at least it seems stupid in the eyes of the world. It doesn't make sense. And there's this promise to Abram. It's somewhat of a reformulation. It's very similar that of the promises that God places on Adam. Similar to another reformulation of the blessings and the promises of Noah. But it's different because God starts narrowing his focus from Adam and all of humanity to this one family. Things haven't been working out with humanity for God. And there's this hinge point in history where he says, I'm going to choose one family. I'm starting with one. I'm not going to start with the whole world. I'm going to start with one. And it seems somewhat scandalous, to be honest with you. One specific people group. God, are you playing favorites? Why Abraham? Why this people group? What about everybody else? God, don't you love everybody else? It almost seems scandalous. If you read that with fresh eyes, it seems scandalous. And yet, God's ultimate goal was inclusivity. In the end, it's God who says, I want to bless all the nations. I want to bless everybody through you. I'm starting with you, but my whole focus and my vision is for the whole world. And the interesting thing about Abram is that he's from, it says in the Bible, Ur of the Chaldeans. Maybe you've read that before. Like, where is that? Never heard of Ur of the Chaldeans before. But if you do a little bit of digging, a little bit of research, you realize that Ur of Chaldeans is Babylon. It's Babylon. So if you're right at the end of Genesis 11, there's this crazy story of the Tower of Babel. And it's represented of humanity going so far away from God and doing their own thing. Babylon is portrayed as the ultimate rival to God's design for human flourishing. It starts in Genesis 11, and that theme actually goes all through the Bible to Revelation. Babylon represents God's rival for human flourishing, so far away from God. Yet this choice of Abraham out of Babylon, it's not accidental, it's not coincidental. It's overwhelmingly redemptive. God has a redemptive purpose in this. Babylon is the epicenter of an idolatrous and rebellion civilization. And yet he chooses to bring someone out of there to bless them, not because they deserve it, but just because God chooses to bless them. So Abraham's 75 years old. He has a wife named Sarah. She's barren. She can't have kids. Like, they're old. They're senior citizens, and they've had no children. And this is God's promise to them. He says, I'm going to make you into a great nation. Can you imagine? Abraham is 75. His wife is around that age, too. She hasn't had kids, And God says, I'm going to make you into a great nation. Abraham's like, I don't know if you've noticed, God, but like, we don't have any kids. And I'm 75. And by the way, I don't even have any land. To make a great nation, you need children, you need people, and you need land. And he has neither of those things. God will bless him. This unknown person is going to become famous. God will protect him. Everybody on earth is going to be blessed through him. These are grand, grand claims. Can Abraham trust God? You know what's interesting about all these promises that are made to Abraham is that most of these things he will never see in his lifetime. He just won't. God promises all these things, and he says, come follow me. And Abram doesn't know this, but I'm sure in the back of God's mind, he's saying, yeah, you're not even going to see this stuff happen. You're not going to see it. But I want you to trust me. I want to trust me anyways. God's going to bless him. He will see God's blessings. God's going to protect him. He's going to see God's protections. The famous part, we'll never see that. God's like, you're going to be famous. You're going to be well known. Abraham's never going to see that. All the land that God promises him, never going to see that. Great nation, nope. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you, nope. He has to live his life in such a way that he has to believe and trust God, that the way he lives his life is going to impact the world for generations. He has to believe that. He has to live in such a way. And he can't give up. And I think there's a lot of application here for our lives, folks. Because in a lot of ways, when you come into faith or you come to church and you start reading your Bible, you start, you know, following Jesus, is that you want to see results. God, I'm following you. I'm trusting you. There should be results in this journey. And can I tell you something? Sometimes you're just not going to see any results in your lifetime. That's the reality of it. But we don't want to accept that. We give up. The amount of people I've seen give up on their faith because they're like, it's not working. It's not working because they're seeing through their human eyes. Our lives are like a breath. That's here today, gone tomorrow. And we're like, it's not working. And the God of the universe, who's like, a day is like 1,000 years, 1,000 years like today, is saying like, can you just relax and like be patient? I have this. You know what? When you practice your spiritual disciplines, when you open up your Bible and you choose, I'm going to try and read my Bible every day. When you choose, you're like, I'm going to spend time in prayer every single day. When you do a spiritual practice or discipline says, I'm going to make going to church a priority. When I'm going to make being a part of spiritual community a priority. There's an aspect of that that like, if you are waiting to see some sort of dividend right away, eventually you will become disappointed. And you're going to ask yourself, is it worth it? Is it worth praying? Is it worth reading my Bible? Is it worth even going to church every Sunday? What am I getting out of this? Because there's an aspect in your spiritual journey that the things that you do over and over and over again, that you are investing for the future. You're saying, I might not see it now, but I'm investing for the future. I know it's going to make an impact. That is the life of Abraham. It's the promise and the waiting. It's the promise and the waiting. I know for my life, there are people, you know, we talk about the aspect that like, how long are people going to remember you when you die? How long before you're forgotten? Is it a generation? If that... Do you know who your great-grandparents are? Can you name them? Do you know who your great-great-grandparents are? Can you name them? I can't. I can sort of because, like, my grandpa was Peter and my great-grandpa was Peter and my great-great-grandpa was Peter. There's this name that Peter that has passed through the generations. I have no idea what he looked like. I have no idea what his personality was like or anything like that. But I know that his life and the lives of my grandparents, how they have lived, I know that I'm reaping the benefits of that. I know. I know that I have this family that moved to the United States from Prussia, then eventually moved up to Canada to farm the land in Canada, and my great-great-grandfather ended up planting a church in Dalmeny, Saskatchewan. The very first church in that community, and he was a pastor. And the way he lived his life, I have no idea who he is, but I know that I'm a result of that. If I could go have a conversation with Peter way back then, I know that his life, he invested his life, and it impacts me. Can you view your life through that lens? That it's not just about you, and it's not just about what you're going to get out of it now, and it's not just those things, but you are going to see something. You are investing with eyes of faith for the future. And you know what? The promise is tested right away. Because Abraham, he leaves and he goes down to this area called Canaan and he gets there. God's like, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to send you to a new land and it's going to be awesome. And then Abraham gets there and there's a famine. There's no rain and there's no food that's being grown. And Abram's like, right, God? What happened to all those promises? I see nothing but famine. And so he's like, what do I do? So he escapes to Egypt. If you're reading in the Bible and people like go down to Egypt, it's never usually a good thing. It's like there's a hint in scripture there. It's never usually a good thing. And he goes down to Egypt and he like, man, he has like so little faith. He makes, I'm not even going to get into the mistakes he makes. You can read it. He makes a mess of himself. And God's right there, and he's like, okay, I'm going to rescue you. And he pulls him out, and he blesses him despite he's an idiot. That's okay. You can be like, I'm an idiot. And God's like, I still love you, and I'm still going to bless you. And that's what he does. It's so cool. And this stuff is happening. You can read the story of Abraham, but then you get to Genesis 15. And it's 10 years after God originally reveals himself to him and asks him to leave his family, his nation, and everything. And there's 10 years later, and this is what it says in Genesis 15. It says, and this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield. I am your reward. See, God starts out saying, I want you to listen to me, I want you to follow me, and I'm going to bless you, I'm going to do all these things. And 10 years later, most of that stuff hasn't happened. None of it's really happened. And God reveals himself to Abraham again, and he says to him, I want to put a baseline important thing between you and me. Your ultimate reward is actually me. Abraham's ultimate reward was God. It wasn't the famous part. It wasn't the children part. It wasn't the nation part. God's like, I want you to understand that your reward is going to be me. It's going to be me. God's presence is his promise. Can you say that? God's presence is your promise. It's your promise. Things can go wrong. Things can like not work out the way it should. But if you can understand that the presence of God is the greatest reward that you can ever have in your life, you'll be on to something. In your waiting, God can be more than enough for you. God's saying to him, I exceed anything I've ever promised you. I exceed that. And then listen to this. After that, it says, but Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eleazar of Damascus. Abraham said, you've given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars. If indeed you can count them, then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited to him as righteousness. You know, in ancient Near Eastern society, if someone who had quite a bit of money like Abraham. Like, God's blessed him. He's got flocks. Abraham's virtually rich, and he didn't get a call from BCLC. But he has a lot of money. And in that society, if you died, you know, they would oftentimes have people working for them. And it would be that person that works for you, your servant who kind of manages your stuff, it would naturally just go to him. That's ancient Near Eastern law. It would go to your servant. And Abraham is informing God like he doesn't know. Hey, I don't have kids. Just so you know. And everything I have is going to go to Eleazar. Like, he's going to be my heir. And I can just imagine this conversation, right? God taking him outside and look, Abraham, hey, look up at the sky. I want you to look at all those stars. And it doesn't make any sense to you, but your descendants are going to be greater than all the stars that you see. And by the way, Abraham, I'm doing this my way, not yours. That's a really key thing, right? Like, God does things his way, not ours. We have our ideas about how God wants to do things. And he does things his way. He's like, can you just trust me and just move forward with me? And I'm going to do things my way, and you're not going to figure it out. I told you when I was 20, like, God spoke to my heart about going to the Middle East. And in my heart, my way was that it would happen right away. And it literally took over a decade. It took over a decade before I was there. And then by the time I got there, my way was that I thought I was going to be there forever. I'm going to die here. Like, this is where God sent me. This is where I'm going to die. And now I'm here. And it's because God's ways are not my ways. He's not telling me way in advance how things are going to happen. He's just telling me, can you trust me? Can you follow me? I'm going to take you on an adventure you've maybe never seen before in your life. Just trust me. Abraham believed the Lord and was credited to him as righteousness. This wasn't just like a head knowledge, folks. This was a trust in his heart. This idea of believe is a trust. It's Abraham saying, I don't get it, but I'm going to trust you. Genesis 15, 7, verse 7 says this, then the Lord told him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land as your possession. But Abraham replied, O sovereign Lord, how can I be sure that I will actually possess it? I want you to take note of this, because just a few verses earlier, it says Abraham believed the Lord. He believed him. And then a few verses later, it says Abraham basically has doubts. He says, how can I be sure that I'll possess it? Do you know that it is a natural part of your journey of faith to have doubts? It's okay. Having trust and having faith in God doesn't mean that you will never have doubts. It doesn't mean that it will not be messy. It doesn't mean that you will not have questions. Sometimes in the church, people feel like, I can't have questions, I can't have doubts, or anything like that. And that's just messed up. It shouldn't be like that. And if you've made to feel that way, I apologize to you. I honestly do. Because this should be a place where we can come with our doubts and not be judged, because Abraham came to God with his doubts, and God wasn't like, you're an idiot. I take back everything that I've promised you. As you'll see, God's like, okay, cool. Like, you have doubts, you have questions. I'll work with that. And God's willing to work with it. So on this journey of faith, you don't have it all figured out. You have questions. God's not threatened by that. He's not threatened by your questions. He's not threatened by your doubts at all. So it's cool. Have your doubts, have your questions. This is how God answers. This might be confusing to you, but it'll make sense to Abraham, and hopefully it'll make sense to you too. The Lord told him, bring me a 3-year-old heifer. Okay, that's a cow, by the way. A 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. So Abraham presented all these to him and killed them. Then he cut each animal down the middle and laid the halves side by side. He did not, however, cut the birds in half. Sorry, pause there because I was a little confused. So he gets all these animals, he cuts them in half, and he lays them side by side. Yes, if you're thinking in your mind, that is weird. Yes, it's weird, okay? After the sun went down and darkness fell, Abram saw a smoking pot and a flaming torch pass between the halves of the carcasses. So the Lord made a covenant with Abraham that day and said, I have given this land to your descendants all the way from the border of Egypt to the great river Euphrates. What's going on here? God is speaking to Abraham in a way that makes sense to him thousands of years ago in the ancient Near East. So this is what would happen in the ancient Near East. Like we create contracts and things like that that people break all the time, unfortunately. But in the ancient world, they would create a covenant amongst people. And a covenant would be like, I promise you my life that I will do A, B, C, or X, Y, Z. I promise you my life. And when they would make a covenant together in the ancient Near East, the way they'd make a covenant is they'd take an animal or animals and they'd cut them in half and they'd lay them side by side and there'd be a river of blood flowing through those animals. Sounds gruesome. But this is what they would do. They would do that, and then those two people who are making that promise or covenant with each other would walk through the blood in between those two halves of the animal. And what they were doing, it was very symbolic of them saying to each other, if I ever break this promise, if I ever break this covenant, may this happen to me. May I be slaughtered like this animal. It sounds gross. It sounds gruesome. But they were so serious about their promises, they're saying, I will allow my life to be sacrificed if I break this promise or I break this covenant. So Abram comes to God and he says, like, how do I know you're going to do all these things? And God's like, let me do something for you that you are going to understand that I'm serious about this. And so they go through this ancient Near Eastern custom together. But if you read the story, it's really interesting because Abraham, they do this, but who walks through the animals? Abraham never walks through the animals. What he sees is a smoking pot. What does it say there? He saw a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch. What's going on in this story is that both of them are supposed to walk through because they're both taking the covenant seriously, and they say, if I break it, I should be killed in this way. Abraham never walks through it. God is the one who walks through it. God is walking through this covenant process with Abraham, and he's saying, I am taking this so seriously that I'm walking through this on behalf of both of us. May I die in this way if the covenant has ever been broken. If you break the covenant, it falls on me. If I break the covenant, it falls on me. I'm taking both sides of the covenant. It falls on me. Thousands of years later, there's one named Jesus. God who comes to earth on the flesh. And he dies a very gruesome death on a cross. And his blood is spilled. And he takes the effect of all of humanity's sin upon himself, and it falls on him. He takes the effect that should have fallen on humanity, right? Because the Bible tells us the wages of sin is death. Our sin results in death. Jesus comes, God comes in human flesh, and he says, I'm going to take that death on me. I'm making a covenant with you, a brand new covenant in my blood, saying, my life is going to be transferred onto you, and the death that sin brings is going to be on me. This story of Abraham, it sounds incredibly gruesome, but it foreshadows what Jesus is going to do on our behalf. And Abraham had no idea. He had no idea. If I can ask the worship team to come forward and prepare for communion. God promises Abraham, he says, all the families of the earth are going to be blessed through you. Do you know how that ultimately is fulfilled? Thousands of years later, through the life of Jesus. Thousands of years later. I mean, God said that to Abraham, like, way ahead of time. God is not in a hurry. Through the life of Jesus, through his death and resurrection and his defeat of sin, everybody on planet Earth gets to receive his salvation, his forgiveness, and a brand new life. That promise is fulfilled in Jesus. It is amazing.